Hello and welcome to the Martian Driving Podcast 109. My name is Terry Frost, and this time around we're talking about the elephant in the room as far as cinematic movies are concerned right at the moment. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, directed by James Gunn and starring Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Michael Rooker, Karen Gillan, Pom Clementiev, Elizabeth Debicki, Sean Gunn, Sylvester Stallone, and Kurt Russell together for the first time since Tango and Cash. And anyway, I also have a guest, and I shouldn't have done that because it made a loud noise. I also have a guest on the podcast this time around. I happen to be married to her, and this is the first time on Martian Driving Podcast for Sally Frost.
Hello, everybody.
Yep, so Sally's going to discuss my Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 with me. But first, I will get the contact details out of the way.
Martian Driving Podcast is a fortnightly podcast of science fiction, horror, fantasy, film appreciation. It doesn't matter when it comes from, whether it's old or new, in black and white, in colour, 3D, anamorphic. It doesn't matter. If it's interesting, I'm going to give it a go. Now, there are occasionally also roundtable discussions where I get a few like-minded cronies around and we talk about science fiction or horror or fantasy or anything that takes our mind. So the format's kind of loose. Now you can contact me and leave feedback via feedbackpaleo, that's feedback P-A-L-E-O at gmail.com. You can go to the Paleo Cinema Cafe on Facebook and have a chat there with me and other people about science fiction, fantasy, horrors, or any other kind of things you want to talk about. Apart from politics, I've got another area for that. Please be aware that this podcast does have swearing in it. So if you're going to be listening to it on speakers, make sure there are no children around, unless you want them to learn wider vocabulary than they already have.
And thank you for that. So the weather here has turned a little cold. It's more wintry. Sal loves the winter, but I'm kind of less in love with it.
That's true. Who likes the summer? It's hot. It's horrible. It's sweaty.
You say that like it's a bad
thing. There's nothing nice about sweat.
Well, some people like it. But anyway, yeah, so the weather's turned cooler. We're into May. We've got through all of April successfully. Sal and I went up to Sydney to visit the family and to celebrate something or other. I don't quite recall what.
Easter?
Yeah, Easter was one of it.
The Sydney Easter Royal Show.
Yep, the agricultural show, yeah.
And I should say it was to visit your side of the family. Yep. I'm a Melbourne born and bred girl, thank you. I don't have relatives in Sydney.
You do now?
Well, I have in-laws, but they're adorable in-laws and I love them to pieces. I can't think of what else there was. Easter Monday?
Yeah, Easter Monday.
Yeah, Easter Monday.
Yeah, so.
Was there something special on Easter Monday?
You tell me.
That's right. I officially became married to an old man.
Oh, thank you for that.
You're welcome, honey.
No, well, I had a birthday and it was one of the ones with a zero on the end of it. And because Sal happens to be, because of an accident of birth, 17 years younger than me, she's given me a lot of shit about it. So had a great time. The family was marvellous. Sal was marvellous. Got to hang out a lot and just really enjoyed celebrating a milestone.
So you're not really going to say the number, hey?
60, big deal.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I've outlived Humphrey Bogart and a bunch of other people, so I'm quite happy about it.
Yes.
I only got 3 years to outlive Richard Boone from Have Gun Will Travel, so I'm kind of ticking off all of the movie stars that I've lived longer than now.
You're doing very well. And I must say, even though that you are 17 years older than me, you are the younger of the two of us.
Yeah, you're a cranky old lady at times.
I am. I'm a get-off-my-lawn type of person, quite. I'm proud.
Yep. And for some reason, and this is an inexplicable thing to me, you're a big fan of the Assassin's Creed movie and you've got the T-shirt on for Assassin's Creed and you bought the movie on Blu-ray.
Not just the movie. I know I'm a big fan of the Assassin's Creed games, which then happened to be turned into a movie. So, yeah, I'm one of the few apologists for the movie. You have to really love the games to appreciate the movie.
And you're a female gamer, which is the biggest half, more than half of the people who play console and computer games are women these days.
Correct.
And they cop a lot of crap of it from various trolls and idiots.
Well, this is why I won't. I love gaming, but I won't podcast or write anything about gaming because, unfortunately, I do fear consequence of what happens to female gamers, and especially if we have a negative thing to say about a game.
Okay, so people know you a bit from you being married to me. Tell us a little bit about what your interests are.
Well, I have to reluctantly admit I'm a bit of a nerd girl.
Yay.
it's taken me 40 years. No. it's taken me a while to admit I was a bit of a nerd girl. I love crafting, gaming, and that's about it.
No, you like a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, but I don't want to come across as too weird. First podcast I've been on for a while.
Yeah, you and I started podcasting more than 10 years ago when we did a little chat cast called Chew Like Buggery and did 13 episodes of that together.
Yes.
Yeah, and people can find that on archive.org if they want to. Don't expect too much. It was early days in podcasting and we had a much less sophisticated microphone.
Yes.
So what have you been watching?
What have I been watching? Well, actually, at the moment, I've been watching more YouTube videos than actual TV shows, mostly because I've been doing a lot of crafting that, so I like to do embroidery for my crafting. So I watch a lot of YouTube videos of so-called true ghost stories and true creepy Walmart encounters and things like that. So for podcasters like yourself putting out things on YouTube.
Yeah.
So they're great background noise for when I'm cross-stitching a human centipede.
Yeah, so you actually did a cross-stitch pattern of a human centipede and managed to sell it yesterday at a market.
I did, because you had to put the catchy phrase teamwork with it.
Mm.
So it's sort of, it drew a lot of attention. It's divided a lot of people. My favourite comments were the people who can appreciate the quality of cross-stitch, but not necessarily the material of which I cross-stitch. So at least they're trying to find a positive in my art. So I thought that was good. So can I do a cheap plug now?
Oh, yeah. I was going to offer you... But saying, can I do a cheap plug's a much classier way of saying it. But yeah.
Well, you were leading to it. I thought I'd cut it out for you.
Do a plug.
So my Etsy shop is called Tiddles Emporium. It's Tiddles like the cat name, T-I-D-D-L-E-S. Terry gave me that pet name when we first met, although he has not called me that for years.
I have, just in
jest. But Tiddles Emporium is also on Facebook, so look me up. I do all sorts of weird stuff. I'm all over the place. My head is 17. I like to say my head's like 17 computer pages all opened on different subject material, and then the last page is error 404, no files found.
Okay.
That's my brain.
Yep. So you do a lot of good crafting. You do jewellery. What kind of stuff do you do? Come on.
Okay. I do jewellery, which are like earrings, bracelets, necklaces. I also do key rings, magnets, brooches. And that's, I think, and I'm also now expanding onto cross-stitch in frames and also experimenting with coasters currently. I like to do things a little bit different. Like, so I'll go from cutesy all the way up to horror.
Okay, fair enough. Well, so I'll put a link to Tiddles Emporium on the show notes for people. So anything else you've been watching apart from Guardians of the Galaxy and that?
Well, my usual TV shows I'm trying to catch up on. A bit different from you in my viewing. I love Bob's Burgers. Family Guy, American Dad, that sort of thing. I've sort of been giving Supernatural a miss, which I'm a bit... They should have stopped about 7 seasons ago.
Apparently the two actors from Supernatural are at one of those hideous conventions now. In Melbourne, no, I think. Yeah.
No.
It was Supernova, I hear.
That was David Boreanaz. It's like Angel.
Yeah.
Bones.
Yeah.
But I don't know about Supernatural ones.
I believe he is.
Oh, okay.
But they are because somebody squeed about meeting them.
I thought it was David Boreanaz.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, those conventions piss me off, to be honest with you. They're basically weird, and they're kind of like a retirement income for unsuccessful actors.
Yes.
And I really don't like that kind of convention. I like conventions where Writers are much more interesting people for me than actors are. Yes, actors are pretty, and actors will play the role while they're up on a stage.
Mm.
But I really like writers. Writers are much more kind of nuanced and interesting people, which is why I go to science fiction and literary conventions.
Which I think that's the big difference between you and I. I say I'm a science fiction fan. For years, while being with you, I denied I was a science fiction fan because I only knew of the literature fandom, which is what you're a huge part of, and I didn't think of supernovas and all of those massive media, like acting type conventions, which is what I would call myself a science fiction fan and a horror fan in that medium, where you're a literature medium. So I find it massively different, you and I, in that aspect. So that's why I denied for so many years I was a nerd per se, because I thought it meant you had to like the literature.
No, I think you came from a background where nerd had a lot of negative connotations, and that may well have impacted that.
No, my parents are massive nerds. I grew up watching Thunderbirds with my dad. Mum watched a lot of Star Trek, that sort of stuff. So they were...
I can just try to imagine your mother wearing Spock ears, because that would be funny. Someone should Photoshop that.
Just move on.
Okay, so we're moving on from that. Okay, so what have I been watching? I've been watching a lot of kind of not too good stuff. I rewatched The Green Hornet, that horrible Seth Rogen movie from a couple of years ago, just to see if it was interesting, and because Christoph Waltz was the bad guy in it. See, people even forget that. And, yeah, it's a dog's breakfast. Having a kind of superhero or crime fighter movie where the protagonist is a sexist asshole with no redeeming features at all, apart from Seth Rogen trying to be funny. It was a vanity project, even though they did get Michel Gondry to direct it. And visually, it's got some interesting bits in it. But, yeah, it's a piece of shit and bears no resemblance at all to a good film.
But isn't Deadpool an asshole?
Yeah, but he's a charming asshole.
He is a charming asshole. He's my favourite superhero.
And so he's not really sexist either. But all through the movie, Seth Rogen's character, Britt Reed, sexually harasses Cameron Diaz.
Okay, I have not. I don't think I've ever seen the movie,
actually. I think you've seen it with me once, but it's so forgettable. So it slides off your mind like your brain's Teflon.
I can barely remember The Green Lantern, let alone The Green Hornet.
But we did get a copy of that, so I watched it again. Because if I buy
it... Did you spend money on it?
Very little. I think I got it for like $8.
Oh, we need to talk budgets
later. Yeah, well, the good thing there is I get to cull it from the collection later on. But apart from that, what have I been watching? Yeah, like you, I've been kind of sucked into the YouTube wormhole and watching that. I did watch the second season of The Expanse science fiction series. I may well be on a panel at Continuum 13, the Melbourne Science Fiction Convention, which I also think is the national science fiction convention this year.
I believe it could be
They're doing a panel on The Expanse, and I really want to get onto that if I'll put up my hand for it, and hopefully I will be on it. And I'll also be recording an episode of Martian Driving Podcast once more live at Continuum 13. I just got the email confirming that.
Oh,
I don't know whether it's going to be a 50-minute episode where we hit the ground running and just do it, or whether they can give me two 50-minute slots.
Mm-hmm.
One way or the other, there will be an episode, and I may well kind of interview some people who are at the convention as well, using the microphone just to kind of
expand. We can make another video for
We can do a YouTube video, absolutely.
But and I'll have a table there too, plug.
Yep, Sally will be selling her stuff at Continuum 13. So if you're attending, and yeah, mortgage your house if you're overseas and come over and visit.
just to buy a magnet off me.
just to buy a magnet off Sal. And so it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's at a hotel that we know and is very reliable and very nice. So, and that is in 9th of June it starts.
Yes, it's so the Queen's birthday.
It'll be a few episodes from now for the podcast. But I'm looking forward to it. But anything else of interest has been happening, apart from the fact that the house is being taken over by Pop Vinyl figures.
And a lot of craft supplies.
Craft supplies and Pop Vinyl figures. A lot
of craft supplies.
So what else have you been doing? You had a little bit of a win yesterday going out and about with your craft.
Yeah, I'm trying to get out more now to do market stalls that I'm free to actually promote myself a bit more. That's not while I'm on the podcast, by the way. I just said to Terry that he has to put me on at least once. I support him doing it every week.
And as Dr. Watson once said, the swiftest surgery is the least painful, so I'll get you on now.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, after 109, was it, episodes?
Oh, about that. No, after 108, this is 109.
Ninth. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, never mind. But, yeah, I went to a market yesterday, which is on the kinky scene, because much to my surprise, the science fiction or the nerdy fans and the kinky fans seem to overlap a lot.
Were there people we knew from conventions there?
Not anyone I knew. You'd probably, maybe you would have, I don't know, because I haven't been in the scene as long as you.
I only know
from what they were wearing or what they looked at on my table, the excitement towards, like, Doctor Who. There was a few Whovians, I know that, because they showed me their tattoos and stuff of Gallifrey.
Okay, so people had Doctor Who tattoos.
Yes.
Okay.
They're a real major Whovian. So it's quite an interesting crossover between kink and science fiction and even a little bit of furry in there. So I think they're my people. I think that's my tribe that I need to start selling to. So it's really, really fun.
No, that's good. And also one of the other things is in my adult lifetime, science fiction has gone mainstream. It was always a ghetto before that, and there's always talk about science fiction being in a ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of, you know, spread like a skin cancer all over everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, things like Doctor Who and the Lucas franchise and all of those other things have made it very much mainstream. And finding those niches that aren't mainstream are the kind of last refuge of old school science fiction fans. And a lot of people kind of railed against that. And but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think one of the problems is I think that we should be embracing much more utopian science fiction.
Yep.
But there is a pessimism about the future that's kind of in the zeitgeist.
Mm.
And I kind of rail against that. Dystopian movies used to, I didn't mind watching them up until a certain point. But then I got to the age when I thought, I'm not going to survive this fucking utopia.
Yeah.
Well, dystopia, sorry. Dystopia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't really like these kind of movies anymore. When I thought I was young and fit and kind of, you know, together enough to survive them, I was totally on board with them. But now when you get to a certain number of birthdays, you go, no, I'm probably not going to survive unless I'm very, very smart. I don't know I am, but I don't know if I'm smart enough to survive this kind of shit. And running away from things isn't something I do as well as I used to do.
But I still love my apocalyptic TV shows. Like, I'm mad for The Walking Dead, for example. So, I mean, I know I would be, like, dead in the first wave of a zombie apocalypse. I'm not going to deny that. And I also, well, if you go real world, I think we need to go to Costco this week and stock up on toilet paper, because when the next war starts, toilet paper will be a commodity.
So you think there is going to be a war?
Of some sort, there will be a skirmish, yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm kind of the belief system that Frank Zappa had, where he said there won't be a nuclear war because it would affect real estate value.
Might not be nuclear, but there'll be a skirmish. Might be Korea War II. I hope not,
because our good friend Tim Merrill is living in Korea at the moment.
Yes.
Amongst other people, amongst 45 other million other people.
People, yes.
And supply of soju would dry up. It's not a good thing. And also the supply of really good genre films, like The Host and Train to Busan.
Yes.
Just give us a quick one on your Train to Busan, because you had an interesting reaction when we watched that before I did it for the last podcast.
You mean like the fact that I was bawling my eyes out by the end of it and it's a zombie horror movie?
Yeah, the emotional content in Train to Busan did have a profound effect on you.
It did. I was a bit like, Terry kept insisting I watch it, and I'm like, no. I always have trouble keeping up with the subtitles because I don't necessarily pay full attention to movies. But I did on this one, and it just took me through an emotional ride of falling in love with some of the characters, especially the husband of the pregnant lady. Mm. He was adorable. And then I got to love the dad as well, the little girl. And I just fell in love with them. And then, you know, a typical horror movie, things happen to cast members one by one. And you know, you root for people to die, you root for people to survive, and it was just a complete emotional roller coaster, and it's fantastic. And at the end of it, after and through my tears, I went, please, America, don't remake this movie.
Yeah, I don't think it really needs a remake. One of the things I don't mind, I don't mind movies being remade if there's something added and something they couldn't do in the first one.
Mm.
But for the most part, remakes are just there as cash cows for
studios. I don't know if it would work either as a remake. I think there might be some cultural...
Culturally specific stuff, yeah.
Stuff, but yeah, it's not like... I don't know. I just couldn't see like a Fast Train through America or even England or any other English-speaking country type movie. I think it was perfect for the setting. They don't need to touch it. It was a brilliant movie. It was easy to follow with subtitles if you're a person like me that can get distracted easy. I'm a bit like Doug the dog in Up, Squirrel. But I found it very easy to follow and really got invested in it, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there are cultural things that you really lose. And even when... things like they subtitled the first Mad Max movie into American English when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, I haven't seen much of that. You really lost some of the cultural subtext in the way people said things in that film as well. So, yeah, Train to Busan, crazily recommended, as I said last time. And, yeah, it's interesting the reaction you had to it. When a movie can engage you emotionally the way that Train to Busan does to us all, it shows they're definitely doing the right thing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to take a break now. When we get back, we're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, directed by James Gunn.
The fate of the universe lies on your shoulders. Now, whatever you do, don't push this button. That will set off the bomb immediately, and we'll all be dead. Now repeat back what I just said.
I am Groot.
No! No, that's the button that will kill everyone. Try again.
I am Groot.
Mm-hmm.
I am Groot.
Uh-huh.
I am Groot.
No! Showtime, a-holes. Ah! Any tape out there? I want to put some tape over the death button.
Nobody has any tape.
Not a single person has tape.
You have an atomic bomb in your bag. If anybody's gonna have tape, it's you.
I have to do everything.
You are wasting a lot of time.
That's a really bad sign.
If I touch someone, I can feel their feelings.
You feel love.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I feel a general unselfish love for just about everybody.
No, sexual love.
No, I don't.
For her.
No.
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret.
Dude, come on. I think you're overreacting a little bit.
You must be so embarrassed. Do me.
And we're back. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 follows on from 2014.
Mm-hmm.
The original Guardians of the Galaxy, directed by James Gunn. Lovely thing about James Gunn as director, which I really kind of like, is the fact that none of his movies made any money until he made Guardians of the Galaxy, which made well over $1 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, and from all reports... he's a lovely guy. I like his stuff. I like Slither. He started out doing horror.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of moments in this very funny movie, which are quite dark and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And Gunn does them well because it's definitely in his wheelhouse to do a horror movie. And he also wrote a movie that was released last year called The Belko Experiment, which we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
But anyway, on with talking around that. I like James Gunn as a director, so I thought I'd mention that. So, of course, you've got the usual suspects in there, usual actors, and I'm rustling papers, and I apologise for that. Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord. Zoe Saldana as Gamora, who doesn't have a last name. A lot of the people in this don't have a last name. Drax the Destroyer, played by Dave Bautista. Vin Diesel as the voice of Baby Groot.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Cooper as the voice of Rocket. Michael Rooker as Yondu, Yodanta, the head of the Ravagers. Karen Gillan as Nebula, the stepsister of Gamora. And a couple of new characters were added. Pom Clemente playing Mantis, a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy eventually, whom they meet on a planet they visit.
Mm-hmm.
So the story starts out pretty nicely, and it has a flashback at the start to the parents of Peter Quill.
Yes.
Now, again, we're going to get into spoiler stuff here. I think we're just going to have to put a blanket spoiler from here on in. If you haven't seen the movie, and it doesn't get released in the United States until May 5th.
5th, I think.
Yep. So please be aware there's going to be spoilers all over this from this point onwards. And talk to whoever runs your cinemas if you want movies like this released a lot faster. So,
Terry, are there going to be spoilers?
Sally, there will be spoilers.
There will be spoilers.
Yes. What I should do is do a really... I'm going to put some echo on this. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put my voice down as spoiler alert, and we're going to put in some echoes.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert. From here on in. Okay. The movie starts out in 1980, which everybody knows about because it was in all the papers. We see a little bit of Peter Quill's mother, Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
With her father. Oh, his father, sorry.
If it was with her father, it'd be a completely different movie.
Yeah, it's not a Tasmanian movie at all. But with his father, played with some interesting looking CG by an actor playing a young Kurt Russell, with Kurt Russell's face kind of texture mapped over the front of it and made a lot younger. And it works really well. It does look like early Snake Plissken-looking Kurt Russell. Mm. And there's a little thing that they do in a forest, which I'm not talking about making Peter Quill the baby, but they plant something in the forest which starts a lot of the plot line of the film.
Yes.
And, before we get into too much further into the spoilers, should we talk about the awesome mixtape?
That gives people time to also switch off if they don't want to hear spoilers.
Okay. So we'll talk about the music in this because the mixtape, the Awesome Mix Volume 2, which follows up on the Awesome Mix Volume 1 that was a plot point in Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, there is a second mixtape for the second film, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we happen to have a copy of it because it was crazy cheap when we went to buy it, when Sally went and buy it.
Correct.
I'll give you an idea of the things that are on it. There are 14 tracks, one of which is Guardian Inferno, which is one done specially for the end credits of the movie,
mm-hmm.
performed by the Sneepers and David Hasselhoff.
Yep.
But the other ones are Mr. Blue Sky by ELO, Fox on the Run by Sweet, Lakeshore Drive, performed by Alyota Hayes Jeremiah, The Chain by Fleetwood Mac, Bring It Home to Me, Sam Cooke, Southern Nights, Glen Campbell, My Sweet Lord, George Harrison, which was there was a lawsuit about My Sweet Lord back in the day because by accident George Harrison pinched the tune from She's So Fine by the Shirelles.
I still don't hear it.
He admitted it.
Well, there you go. I still don't hear it.
Hang on. What I'll do is I'll put another mark here. And I'll slip in a little bit of She's So Fine and My Sweet Lord so people can get that. Okay, and then we've got the one that has become your earworm, Brandy, You're a Fine Girl, performed by Looking Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll probably put a little bit of that right here too. The sailor say, Brandy, you're a fine girl. And then Come a Little Bit Closer by Jay and the Americans, which is kind of cool. Wham Bang Shang-A-Lang by Silver. Surrender by Cheap Trick. Father and Son by Cat Stevens, also known as Yusuf now. And Flashlight performed by Parliament. And all of them work really well in the context of this movie. And they give it a kind of retro feel, which is kind of cool because, as we know from the first movie, Peter Quill's pop cultural knowledge of Earth stopped at around 1980-something when he was kidnapped by Yondu and the Ravagers. So he doesn't know anything about anything more recent. Though at one stage later in the movie, and this is where we start to get into spoiler space, his music collection gets updated by somebody who gives him something. Now, I'm not going to spoil what it is because it's an in-joke and it's a technological joke.
Yes.
That I won't spoil for people. Even though I'm doing spoilers, I'm not going to spoil that one for you. The movie then goes into a battle between the Guardians and a giant tentacled monster.
Which you see in the trailers as well.
Which so you see in the trailers.
Giving away any spoilers.
Which is trying to steal some really, really powerful batteries from an alien species called the Sovereign, who have a genetically modified and genetically controlled culture. Everybody's good looking and golden in color. And as after they defeat the monster and save the batteries, Rocket steals some of the batteries, which means that the Sovereign's entire space fleet starts chasing the Guardians. And they're all drones because none of the Sovereign's people want to risk themselves.
Correct.
So they've got all of these enormous, well, not enormous, but not two big spaceships, but they've got like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them chasing the Guardians through quantum asteroid fields. And the quantum asteroids are kind of cool.
Yes.
And until a spaceship with a man standing on top of it blasts the shit out of the entire fleet. And because it's damaged, the Milano, the Guardian's ship, crashes on a planet and the person who rescued them comes down. And it turns out to be a character called Ego, played by Kurt Russell.
Yes.
He was a celestial. In a sense, he's a sentient planet who has a kind of human body that he created so he can walk around and talk to people. And he is Star-Lord's father. He takes some of the Guardians back to his planet, also known as Ego, while Rocket and who else stayed
behind? Well, at this stage they had Nebula as well because she was part of the bargaining chip.
Rocket and Nebula stay behind?
Rocket and Nebula and Groot.
And Groot stay behind to repair the Milano.
Yes.
While the others, Drax, Arba Gamora, Star-Lord, is that the lot?
Well, Mantis, obviously.
No, well, Mantis comes on along later because Mantis
lives on. Yeah, it was just mainly Gamora, Drax, and Star-Lord.
Yeah, so they go to Ego's planet, which is one of the most fantastic scenes I've seen in any science fiction movie. It's CG taken to another level. Now, it was done, they were done with a special digital camera called a Red something or other, which is actually like a cinemascope camera for digital cinema.
Right.
And the special effects for Ego's planet when they go on a bit of a guided tour of the planet is the most complex CG scene ever done in a movie. There are over a trillion polygons of data to make those scenes. And it looks fantastic. The detail and the layering and just the sharpness of the images are mind-blowingly good. I'm tempted to go and see the movie in 3D because we saw it in 2D.
Yeah.
For the simple reason that I want to see what that would look like in 3D. So they go to Ego's planet and meet Mantis, who's an empath.
Yes.
And she's got antennas and she's kind of humanoid. And her and Drax have some interactions which are quite amusing. And we learn a lot about Drax during the... In fact, we learn a lot about all the characters during the...
Yeah, this one was definitely character-centric as opposed to the first one. So this one you got, you know, daddy issues, sister issues, Drax issues. God, Drax is adorable.
Yeah.
But you got even Yondu and Rocket. You've learnt more about people and all about why they are
Who they are.
Who they are. Well, not that Rocket's a person, but...
Well, he's a person. He just happens to be a raccoon that's genetically modified by a bunch of assholes.
This is true. And that came up a fair bit. So, yeah, it was very sort of almost drama, but done in a really good way, like a family drama, but done in a really not so dramatic way.
Yeah, and all of the actors bring their A game. One of the standout people for me, apart from Michael Rooker as Yondu, who's fantastic in this, is Dave Bautista playing Drax, because Bautista's a guy who I could see the quality of his acting improved with every movie, and he's taken some different roles. He played the generic muscly bad guy inspector, which gave him not a lot of room to play with.
Mm.
But I really think he's one of those actors who has a certain physical appearance because he's massively muscled.
Yes.
But he also has skill and talent as a good mainstream actor.
Well, he got a lot of comedy chops in this one. He got to be the comedian whilst playing this character who's all about telling you like an alien, just telling you like it is, because his people don't have humour.
They're very literalist.
Yes, they're literal. And so the lines came across quite humorous, and I think he did it fantastic. He turned into my second favourite character of the entire movie.
Who's your favourite character? As if I don't know. And she's wearing a hat for her favourite character, I don't know. A little hat with a pom-pom.
Yes, Baba Groot.
Yeah, Baby Groot.
Baby Groot.
Because, of course, remember from the first one, Groot was blown apart from the seedling, which grew into Baby Groot.
Groot in general. I love Groot. Yeah. I am Groot. We are Groot.
Yeah, and, of course, this being a movie, we learn that Ego isn't quite what he appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be paying the kind of father who wants to re-engage with his son.
Mm-hmm.
But he has his own agenda. Even though we're kind of venturing into spoilers a little bit, I'm not going to go spoilery on that. But it's a really nice character arc, and there are a couple of scenes involving that are very, very dark and very, very nasty. Even though most of the movie is, there's one-liners everywhere. The title sequence we should mention as well, which is the battle with the great big tentacle alien.
Yeah, well, all of the guardians are battling the alien, except Groot, who's got the little baby Groot's got the headphones on and dancing around the platform to Mr. Blue Sky.
Yeah.
By ELO. And it's just adorable. He's doing his little dances and waving to them. They're all waving back to him like he would a little kid.
Yeah.
If he's giving you attention whilst they're trying frantically to kill this
giant tentacle. Giant,
and I think they also stole a bit from Sharknado.
No, well, yeah. Yeah, well, Hasselhoff's in one of the Sharknado movies. Well, yes, as well.
But the way they ended up killing the alien thing was definitely a homage to Sharknado. I'm not going to give it away again, but if you've seen the first Sharknado, you'll pick it instantly.
Yep, and it's a lot of fun, that scene. But and then it does get to that kind of darker phase. Now, there is one of the problems I have with the film, and I have very few problems with it. One of them is that there are a couple of slow patches towards the rear end of it.
Mm-hmm.
As things are going on and the battles continue and fighting Ego is something, even though visually it's really interesting, it's the kind of thing we've seen a couple of times before in some other movies, and I think that kind of weakens it slightly. I don't think it kind of damages the film, but, a whole bunch of people in desperate circumstances battling an enormous entity.
Yeah.
Is something we've seen before a little bit.
See, I didn't get bored or find that to me, because I was quite surprised when you said that to me. You found that it dragged a bit.
I didn't say drag. I said it slowed down. I mean, visually it's always interesting and there's always stuff going on. And we did see, I should give it the context in which we saw it. We saw it in what they call gold class cinemas, which are the posh cinemas with the reclining seats. There's never more than about 25 seats in the cinema.
Mm.
And people come in and deliver your food. But the only session we could get for Gold Class was at 9:45 at night, which is quite late. And, we didn't get out of the cinema till well after midnight.
Mm.
And so maybe it was me flagging as much as the film was, but I have heard from a couple of other people that, the pacing kind of drops off a little bit.
And, okay, well, I interestingly didn't feel that. The only thing that sort of bored me was the sister relationship, but that's because I got my own issues with sister relationships.
Which is, I actually talked about this, as I've said to people, with Rebecca McLaren on ABC Darwin.
Mm.
And I said that one of the other issues I have with the film is that I'm sick of movies with daddy issues.
Mm.
And again, that kind of rolls into my own personal history to an extent. But, yeah, I want to see some people that don't have daddy issues in things. It's something that I think is almost becoming a cliche in certain kinds of epic cinema these days.
It's the easiest way to give a character a backstory and why they've got issues.
Whereas the father-daughter relationship in Train to Busan, for instance, I didn't have any problem with.
Yeah.
Because I think... Yeah, it was seen from the viewpoint of the father, I suppose, rather than the viewpoint of the child. And for me, that kind of dynamic changes the way I engage with film.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but it wasn't such a film that it played on daddy issues. It was just giving the context of why Peter Quill met Ego and that. But the whole Gamora, Nebula, let's kill each other to death. Obviously, in the first movie,
too. Yeah, let's kill each other, but not to death.
Not to death, yeah, exactly. you know what I mean.
Okay.
In the first movie to this one, going, but all I want was a sister. It's like, oh, please.
No, I think
give me a rest.
Damaged people strike out because it's an instinct to strike out.
Yeah, but as again, I'm bringing my own personal issues with sisters into the movie, so that's the only bit for me I didn't like.
And there are always going to be things like that. If you've got any kind of marred history in your life, there are going to be certain kinds of movies and certain things in movies.
Yeah.
That kind of rub you the wrong way. And as long as you can recognise that and not blame the movie for it, I think that's a reasonable approach.
Well, it's just taught me that maybe I need to go and beat the shit out of my sister on some faraway planet and then we'll be best friends.
And then rescue her as the planet gets destroyed.
And then we might actually get along again. One of us has to be blue and one of us has to be green, though.
Good luck with that. But, visually, and apart from the pacing of the movie is fine, one of the things I should tell people, and this doesn't get into spoilers necessarily, there are 5 post-credit sequences in this film, which is a new record.
Mm.
And the credits themselves are really fun because there are lots of little Easter eggs in the credits themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the 5 post-credit sequences work. Some of them foreshadow. Some of them are just totally fun. Yes. And one of them confirms a fan theory. Now, again, I'm going to get into a spoiler for this one because Stan Lee's cameo with the Watchers, who are those tall people you saw, who watch everything that happens in the universe, folds into, and Kevin Feige has admitted this is the case, that Stan Lee is actually one of the Watchers who watches over planet Earth. The Watcher. This is why Stan Lee is in all of the Marvel movies, because he is the Watcher.
But the other Watchers tend to get bored with him by the looks of
things. Yeah, because he's usually not
boring. He's just an old dithering man.
Yeah, but actually that fan theory makes sense, and they gave that to Stan Lee as well, because Stan Lee's in his 90s now.
Yes.
And he's not going to be doing too many more of these, though. He has already recorded, I think, for the next 2 Marvel films, he's recorded his cameos because James Gunn directed him in those.
Yeah.
He directed him for 3. Though it may have been, one way there, he's directed him for 3 Stan Lee cameos. And he talked to Kevin Feige about it, and he said, yeah, we'll make it canon that Stan Lee is actually one of the Watchers. Now, that doesn't spoil the film particularly.
No.
It's more of an Easter egg and a squee kind of thing than something.
I think 4 out of the 5 were probably more for squee as opposed to future Marvel directions.
Yeah, but the 5th one kind of does.
Yeah.
But all of them are good. All of them are fun.
Yes.
One of them gives Sean Gunn's character Kraglin a little bit of fun.
Yes.
And, I really, this movie is one of those kind of films, and increasingly as time goes on, I appreciate films that have a lot of joy, joyous films, movies that make you feel good without talking down to you or without infantilizing you.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of this film is like that. It's just one of those films that's very joyous. It embraces genre. It embraces retro music. And that whole mixtape idea, which is James Gunn's idea for the 2 Guardians of the Galaxy films, really does work well, both as a plot device to give us an understanding of the character of Peter Quill. but also as a kick-ass way to use some really cool songs in a movie which you may not have been able to do that with because it's a space opera. No one's going to be putting Electric Light Orchestra in a Star Wars film because it's out of context. But because of that association with Peter Quill, the 1970s and 1980s, and Earth, it gave the justification for this, which also worked towards making the movies accessible.
Yeah, and it steers away from cliche songs as well.
Yeah, they didn't do All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix the way everybody does.
Moon
Rising.
Maybe the only cliche-ish song would have been Father and Son.
Yeah, I think to an extent Father and Son. But, I mean,
I think the rest of them are pretty.
I think, did they use Born and Blitz in the first one?
I can't remember.
They used some other sweet song, but.
Yeah, they might have. But, yeah, no, it was well done. I mean, my favourite song is definitely The Guardian's Inferno with Zardu Hasselfrau.
Yeah, which is what they think David Hasselhoff's name is.
Yeah, they get his name wrong, and Gamora calls him Zardu Hasselfrau, which is brilliant. So it was great. It's a great song, just a great, silly, silly song.
And there is a cliffhanger. Yeah, there's one plot bit that we haven't got tied up at the end of this film, too. What happened to the Milano? I know the rocket was starting to repair it in a very groovy way, but the spaceship, the Milano, which is the Guardian.
I thought they were back on it because one of the post-credit sequence when Quill went in to visit Groot in his room.
Yeah.
That was back on the Milano.
Okay, it could well have been because I like the Milano as a ship. I've actually got that model of Star-Lord and the Milano that we got in the Collector's Corp subscription box for Guardians of the Galaxy, which I really like. I may even take it out of the box. That's how much I like it.
Ooh.
I know normally I leave things in the box, but I may make a difference this time.
Definitely. And that post-credit sequence is also very cute in the sense it's showing Peter Quill is now turned into a father to a Groot.
Yes, which is kind of funny and cool, and we won't do any more of a spoiler of it than that. No. And Sal has her I Am Groot beanie on at the moment, which is very cool, and she always looks cute in hats. So
thank you.
What I might do is I might make the picture for this episode, you in your I Am Groot beanie. I'll take a photo of it, so we'll make that the image for the podcast.
Dear, I'm sorry in advance, people.
No, it's negative self-talk from you. So, they did say the Guardians will be back. I know they're part of Avengers Infinity War. And they're going to be rolled into that.
Well, yes, because there was an Infinity Stone in there.
I doubt very much whether they won't make another Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So far from the places it's been released, it's got very good box office.
Yeah.
And very good critical feedback.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a couple of Marvel movies that have been less favourably looked at than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. But I think that it does work well for that reason. I think they shouldn't make too many more of them for the simple reason that it's lightning in a bottle. Everything comes together and you don't want it to become tired and cliched.
Correct.
I think maybe one more Guardians of the Galaxy movie is about what we need to kind of tie up their story. You can have them as ongoing characters in the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, of course.
Yeah, I think, but I feel like that with all Marvel characters. I'm tired of Iron Man movies. I'm tired of Captain America movies.
Okay.
Mostly because, you know, I think Captain America is a bit of a prissy pants, but that's just...
Okay. Well, yeah.
He's a goody two-shoes. He annoys the crap out of me.
Well, I know that Chris Evans is kind of fading out of the role, and he said that he wants to do that. And also, to a certain extent, Robert Downey Jr. with Iron Man.
Well, he's...
They're passing the baton a little bit to the younger guys and women.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I mean... I love Marvel over DC, most definitely. I've been very disappointed with all the DC movies, but I think it's time to... I like the ensemble ones better, like the Avengers and stuff like that, because there's not centering too much on one character. Mm. There's so much going on. So, yeah, you could probably get away with a few more Guardians, in a sense, than, say, Iron Man's or Captain America's.
What I want with Guardians... is I want to have a movie where Peter Quill gets back to Earth.
Yeah.
I think that kind of gives us the emotional closure that we as an audience need for that.
Mm.
And, kind of let him re-engage with his home planet. Even though he's only half human, I think that he said he didn't want to go back to the planet in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He said he didn't want to go back to the planet that killed his mother.
Yes.
But as the plot progresses, maybe that becomes a weaker motive for him in future.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the planet that killed his mother isn't the whole story.
Well, if they're going to be involved in an Infinity War, so to speak, surely there'd have to be an aspect of that on Earth.
Yeah, and there is a scene as well on Earth. The part of the big bad in this movie does affect a part of Earth as well.
Yeah.
And I think that...
Who knows where it will end up.
Yeah, but we want to go for the ride, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So is there anything else you want to say about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
No, just with it, because I don't want to give spoilers, but all I'll say is I also cried in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm going to say.
We can sort of safely, venturing only slightly into spoilers, there is a character that a lot of people like who doesn't see the end of the film.
Yes.
And gets some reasonable closure on it. There's also things like there's a small role, Starcad by Sylvester Stallone in this one as well.
Yes.
Sylvester Stallone rocks up as Starcad. Michelle Yeoh is in there playing another. What we will mention is there are cameos now for people who know the comics very well, and there are some characters that show up from those comics. I'll just name check them. I won't say what they look like.
Mm.
Martin X, Charlie 27, a bunch of other characters who are very interesting. And were they to take Guardians of the Galaxy into the future, I think some of those characters coming in could make it a new Avengers kind of franchise for Marvel in that greater cosmic part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because they are very cool characters and there's some interesting parts of that. And so there are some cameos of those people, and one of the post-credit sequences sets up something that's been spoken about a little bit in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that hasn't quite happened yet. Something about a cocoon, which I won't go any further on. Yeah, I know you're pulling your face there because you don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm not going to spoil it on there.
Oh, I remember. Sorry, yes. Yeah, that was the one serious one I was talking about. The there were the four more cute ones, and then there was the... Which
kind of would be... I'm not sure where they're going to take it, and it could work if it's done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I just thought it through, and yes, it could definitely work. And I won't say why, because that would give away who the character is. But one of the things I was looking at when I was looking at Guardians of the Galaxy is the other people that were going to get to play Ego apart from Kurt Russell.
Okay.
Here's the list I've got from IMDb. Gary Oldman.
Okay.
Viggo Mortensen. Christoph Waltz. Christopher Plummer. Max von Sydow. And Liam Neeson. We're all considered Liam to Neeson's. Play Ego. The Liam Neesons, yeah.
The Liam Neesons. I could see the Liam Neesons.
Yeah.
Because he's just got a big screen presence,
like
physically as well. I think that you needed the physical presence. Like, I love Christoph Waltz, but he would have been too tiny for the part.
Well,
I also think
that Kurt Russell has that nice balance between comedy and drama.
Just to be a little bit like shallow, he's definitely aged quite well.
Yeah,
he's quite a handsome planet, an older gentleman.
Yeah. Well, one of the bits that's a bit sad about this movie is they were going to do a little bit of a cameo with John C. Reilly's character, Day.
Oh, yeah, Nova Corps.
But due to scheduling conflicts, they couldn't get him in there. So he may well turn up at a future Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Because, by the way, that film, the digital camera used, is called, from a company called Red, and it's called a Weapon 8K digital camera. It's the digital equivalent to VistaVision, a higher definition format for video.
Yeah, it was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it really does look really well.
Yeah.
And,
It's a movie that I, again, because I, as I said earlier, I get squirrel brain. I was not distracted from this movie for 1 second. I thoroughly enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah.
And I haven't. Train to Busan was probably the last one before that. I have not felt that in a movie for a very long time.
Yeah, I think one of the things I liked about seeing Train to Busan with you, just to get back to that for a moment, is the fact that it took you way out of your comfort zone and you loved it.
Yes.
I think that that's maybe something I've got to help you with.
Yeah.
Because getting outside your comfort zone is the way you learn about movies.
Yeah, I don't need to become the next paleo cinema.
I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying that, you know, expanding.
There's only enough time in the world in this house for one podcaster. Who would look after the cats if we were both podcasting, dear?
We could get a robot.
Get a maid to look at. We need a cat sitter because we're all podcasting.
I think you could podcast with a cat on your lap quite well. You'd be very good at that actually. Kind of thing.
Yes, I would. But ultimately, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I laughed, I cried, I farted.
Okay.
That's my intake of the movie.
Yeah, but the farting had nothing to do with
that's the movie. That's probably
the popcorn. Had a lot to do with you. But, yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see. There's some upcoming things that are really going to be interesting in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've got Thor Ragnarok and the trailer dropped for that, which is, shows that it continues that slightly lighter touch because I think Thor, The Dark World, was a little too dark for a Thor movie, whereas Thor Ragnarok does show it's going to be an interesting thing. It's going to be a lot more upbeat. And I think because Chris Hemsworth can play the comedy very well, as Ghostbusters and other films like that have shown.
But also Tom Hiddleston. Tom Hiddleston's
in there. And, of course, we've got Mark Ruffalo back. And I've got such respect for Mark Ruffalo as an actor.
He's the best of the Hulks.
Yeah, absolutely the best of the Hulks. But, so looking forward to that. And then we've got other things coming out. Spider-Man Homecoming I'll go and see because I think that it's – I've got to see it because it's a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie and I'm worlded on. But also Black Panther, which is in production at the moment, and they've done a sizzle reel which was shown to some distributors. And a few minds were blown with that too because it's coming from an African-American viewpoint and also an African viewpoint. And it's going to be told almost entirely with actors of colour.
Yeah.
And bringing a different cultural thing rather than having that America-centric.
It would be interesting to see the reaction to that, actually.
I don't care the reaction to that. It's going to bring the racists out. I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, sadly, it's a movie I really want to see. I like Black Panther as a character. In the same way I like Luke Cage as a character and I liked Iron Fist, even though the Iron Fist TV series totally
whitewashed.
Yeah. Well, it didn't necessarily wash, but it was badly done. And the lead actor was a little weak. But anyway, just to tidy things up, anything else you want to talk about before we end this little puppy?
No, the next big film I'm desperate to see and I will make sure I get to go on your podcast again for.
So you've run yourself in without my permission, but that's okay.
Whether or not anyone wants me here, I'm coming back. We'll be Wonder Woman.
Yeah, we'll definitely do Wonder Woman together.
And because I have got such a girl crush on Gal Gadot.
Okay.
She's a gorgeous.
You can't even say her name right.
Gal Gadot.
Gal Gadot.
Oh, Gadot. The chick who plays Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
She's adorable. She's gorgeous. But I'm more for the fact because it's Wonder Woman. So I have to, as a woman, and yes, I am a woman.
Well, I knew that.
I have to come back for that one.
Good. Okay, well, I'm officially inviting you back and it's now on record.
Unless you get a resounding no from the listeners.
Even if I do, you're going to be on here. Nobody ever tells me no with the podcast. They tell me what they like and what they don't like, but nobody bosses me around.
They might say, who was that dickhead you had co-hosting with you?
I said, that's not a nice way to talk about Claire. But, no, anyway, thank you very much for being on this, and you've done really well. We've had a lot of fun with it.
Thank you.
And, so I'm looking forward to going to see Wonder Woman with you.
Yes.
Even though you're going to squee and wriggle.
I'm hoping it's as funny as it looks like in the trailers, but serious funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for doing that. And so that's pretty much it for this episode. We've been sitting around the dining table rather than in the man cave this time around, recording with the Zoom H2N microphone. Thanks again for doing it. And thank you for listening too. And for some reason, even though I've been sitting still, I've got my steps in. Okay, I'll leave that bit out. Let's put a mark there. Yes, and also thanks to the listeners. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to the Patreon subscribers who help us keep the podcast going. You can become one of them at patreon.com/paleocinema. I am announcing in the next Paleo Cinema podcast the winners of the competition for my annual birthday giveaway amongst the Patreon subscribers. And there's some good stuff. There's going to be something going overseas. There's also going to be something for local people.
For local people.
So thanks very much. And as usual, thanks to the two Kerrys. And again, here are the credits in the style of movie credits. So thank you for listening. I'll be back soon with another Martian Driving podcast, and sooner than that with the Paleo Cinema. Take care, look after yourselves. We'll be back soon, and keep watching the skies.
Thank you to all of the Patreon subscribers, and here are the credits in the style of movie credits to acknowledge and thank all of them. We have Tom, our focus puller, Sarah, our special effects technician, Ian, our caterer, Grant, our technicolor consultant, Claire, our script doctor, Gary, our prop master, Morris, our music director, Jan, our dialect coach, Armin, our key grip, Matt, our rattlesnake wrangler, Elaine, our scientific advisor, Julia, our casting director, Chris, our camera operator, Christopher, our gaffer, Miss Jane, the wardrobe mistress, Tansy, the foley artist, Alyssa, the location scout, Mark, our second unit director, Paul, our special makeup effects director, Tammy, our donut wrangler, Tim, our New York unit director, Rabbi Steve, our spiritual advisor, Steve, our script doctor, Dylan, our goat wrangler, Eric, our set security lead, Kerry, our second script doctor, Richard, our set photographer, and our extras, Kathleen, Mark, and David. And let's not forget Steve Sullivan, our director of monster effects, and Richard C., our transportation co-captain. So thank you very much to all the subscribers, and you too can subscribe at patreon.com/paleocinema.